This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. How's this for a horror show? Invaders so cunning they can bore into a body and compel it to do their bidding. We're talking blood-sucking interlopers that can take over and force creatures to act against their own instincts, surrendering their very bodies as habitats, giving over reproduction, even plunging to their own deaths. This is not a pitch for yet another zombie movie or TV series. These mind-controlling hijackers are real. Science writer and New York Times columnist Carl Zimmer wrote about current research on parasites, which can control the behavior of their hosts, turning them into kind of sacrificial vessels for their own parasitic survival. His article is called Nature's Nightmare Mind Suckers, and it is the cover story on the National Geographic. Carl Zimmer, great to speak with you again.
Thanks for having me.
So some of the things that parasites can make a critter do, I just mentioned, some very horrific stories. One of the most chilling is how the parasitic wasp takes over the spotted lady beetle. What can you tell us?
So there are many species of wasps that actually are parasites, which might seem strange to us because we think of wasps as just flying around and being free living. But the fact is that they will use hosts as nurseries, as places where they will lay their eggs. And so there's one example where there is one of these wasps that makes a lady bug its host. And so it stings it and injects an egg. And then the egg hatches and then grows into a larva inside the living ladybug. And the parasite grows and it grows and it grows. And then finally it comes out. And it's now time for the larva to make itself basically a cocoon. But the thing is, it's very vulnerable at this point. So it's actually altered the ladybug's behavior so much that now the ladybug doesn't just go away. It actually sticks around and acts as a bodyguard. It fights off any other insects that might come along and try to eat the parasite in its cocoon.
Some of the other tormenting parasites that you talk about also, it becomes like an ultimate Stockholm syndrome, right? You know, you're sort of taking something captive and you end up protecting it. The jewel wasp, another wasp that sort of takes over, what does it do?
So the jewel wasp, what it does is it attacks cockroaches. So what it does is it first swoops down on a cockroach and inserts its stinger into the cockroach's sort of the middle of its body, basically. And it hits the nerves there so that now the cockroach can't walk. It's basically paralyzed temporarily. So that way the wasp doesn't have to fight with the cockroach when it does the really complicated procedure, which is it then takes its stinger and places the stinger inside the cockroach's brain where it can deliver a cocktail of chemicals. And these chemicals then have a long-term effect on the cockroach's behavior. So after it recovers from the paralysis, it now essentially has lost its drive. It can walk, it can run, but it just doesn't want to. It just doesn't have any initiative. And now what the wasp does is it grabs onto one of the cockroach's antenna and pulls on it, kind of like a dog on a leash, into a burrow that it's dug. And in that burrow, it sticks an egg on the underside of the cockroach, and then the wasp climbs out, and it seals the burrow shut. At any point in this process, the cockroach could have run away. It's alive. Its muscles are working. Its nervous system is working. It's just been altered. And then the egg hatches, and the larva crawls inside the cockroach and then grows, and it actually bursts out of the cockroach's body. The cockroach dies. The wasp crawls out of the burrow and flies away.
We can hear the theremin music.
Yeah, it's amazing.
But they're so strategic and wily. You know, there are these tiny worms and viruses that know that they need to get into a bird stomach or a cat stomach in order to thrive. So they disable or cripple their host as a mere vehicle. They destroy their instinct. How does this happen? Or why?
Well, I mean, it's the product of evolution, and so through, you know, many, many generations, you get the sort of fine-tuning of manipulating their environment. And, you know, all animals can manipulate their environment in one way or the other. You know, beavers make dams, for example, and they will, you know, create, you know, huge ponds that are very good for, you know, change the whole ecosystem. And, you know, those also make the environment good for the beaver itself. And so you could say, like, well, how on earth could a beaver know to do this? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, because it's got genes that have been modified, and so that now its brain generates this behavior to build a dam. So parasites are the same way, except that instead of building a dam, they're basically making the behavior of other animals their sort of raw material.
Okay, so if this is all about evolution and adaptation, why does the evolution of the parasite trump the evolutionary advantages of the host?
Well, you know, we shouldn't be too unfair to the host. I mean, they are, you know, if they can evolve a defense so that they don't get killed by parasites, then they're going to have a lot more offspring than the hosts that do get parasitized. And so there is actually a lot of defense that hosts have against parasites. So, for example, when wasps try to lay their eggs inside of ladybugs, ladybugs actually have very strong immune systems, and they will attack the egg. They'll try to basically suffocate it. But, you know, then that kind of defense then creates an opportunity for parasites to evolve a new counterattack. And so you have this sort of back and forth, a kind of an arms race between parasites and their hosts. And that is one of the explanations for how parasites get to be so kind of elaborate and almost crazy in the way that they can control their hosts, because they're in this race and they're evolving very fast, and they've been doing so for millions of years.
Hmm. So, okay, baculoviruses that can turn caterpillars into goo, flatworms that can grow deformed limbs on bullfrogs. Looking at these stories, was there anyone in particular that just really struck you with its ingenuity?
Oh, I can remember the first example I ever heard of parasites manipulating their hosts. It was when I was actually working on a whole book on parasites called Parasite Rex. And it was this amazing case where ants get infected by a fungus. And, you know, you don't think of funguses as being terribly sophisticated. You just think of mushrooms. But the fact is that if a spore gets on an ant, it germinates and it kind of drills down inside the ant's body, and it starts to grow all of these tendrils inside of its body, and it feeds on it. Some of those tendrils go into its brain, and something very weird happens. It starts crawling up, and it crawls up, up, up to a leaf, and it'll go to the underside of the leaf and clamp down on it. And then, and only then, the fungus shoots up this stalk out of its body. The ant is dead at this point, but now the fungus is in exactly where it wants to be to shower down spores on other ants below. So it basically uses the ant to get to a place where it can be more likely to complete its cycle. The first time I heard about that, I just thought it was just some kind of science fiction story. I just couldn't believe it.
Well, speaking of the science fiction story, have you ever heard of parasites taking over a human brain in a similar way, or compelling a human being to act on its behalf?
Yeah, that's always the big question with these things. You know, it's one thing, I guess, you know, to manipulate an ant or a cockroach, but, you know, what about people? I think the evidence is still very preliminary, and part of the reason for that is that, you know, it's hard to do research on people in this way. I mean, scientists can raise thousands of wasps and ladybugs and observe the behavior and see what happens if you adjust things a little bit. We just don't do that with people, thank goodness. But there are some interesting parasites. So there's one that's called Toxoplasma, and people get it from handling kitty litter or get it in contaminated soil or raw meat. It's a single-celled parasite. And its normal cycle is in the wild. Its host is cats, where it reproduces and produces eggs. Then the cat sheds them with their droppings. And then the toxoplasma then gets into animals like rats. And when the rats get eaten by cats, then the parasite gets back to where it started and can reproduce again. When rats get infected with toxoplasma, something very startling happens. They're healthy for the most part, but they lose their fear of cats. And in some cases, it looks as if they're actually attracted to the smell of cats. And so the thinking is that this might raise the odds that the parasite can get into a cat and then be able to reproduce. Now, there are a lot of studies going on to see what happens when toxoplasma gets into people. It does look like there are some personality differences between people who have toxoplasma and people who don't.
So I guess despite the baffling ingenuity of some of these parasites, they don't win out always. There's not a clear winner or loser. I mean, we still have rats, we still have cats, and we still also have this virus that bores into them.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, any species that's still managing to be alive today is something of a winner, you know, because it exists. If you look at the number of species on Earth, the number of species of parasites vastly outnumbers the number of species of hosts.
Huh.
So the parasites have won.
Carl Zimmer, science writer and New York Times columnist, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Carl Zimmer wrote the cover story for the National Geographic, Nature's Nightmare Mind Suckers. You'll find a link to the article and the spectacular photos at wordofmouthradio.org. Well, we're trying our best to stay out of the political fray today, but we are going to dip our toes in just a bit with an historical look at political losers. That's capital L, losers. The tricky art of conceding a political race when word of mouth continues.